and welcome to another edition of Leading and Growing Your Real Estate Business. Coach James Shorty, aka Shorty, for another edition. And today, before we get into it, make sure you press that little subscribe button that you so you can get the latest episodes dropping into your email and notifications. So if you're watching it on YouTube or listening through Spotify or iTunes or SoundCloud, just make sure you hit follow or subscribe. So today, oh my goodness, I'm excited. Here is one of the legends, one of the gurus, one of the OGs of the real estate industry, the man himself, John Cunningham. Now, I want to give you, his journey has been absolutely phenomenal. Commencing his real estate career in 1977, John is a highly regarded real estate identity, definitely in Australia, and a true veteran in the industry. Yes, so true. He began a very simple philosophy to establish business relationships built on trust and transparency while delivering first-class service and results for his clients. John has worked hard to make this the trademark of his own real estate career, as well as laying the foundations for the Cunninghams business and its people. Opening Cunningham Real Estate in 1991 with his wife, Anne, John pioneered this philosophy throughout his career, which has turned the small family business into a trusted and cutting-edge real estate brand based in Sydney's Northern Beaches. Cunninghams now operates over four offices with 80 staff members from Manly, Balgowlah, DY, and Avalon. Over his career, John's innovative and personal approach, coupled with his expertise and intimate knowledge of the market, have set himself and Cunninghams as a benchmark business in the industry. His team has become one of the most highly awarded in Australia, and the business is recognized throughout Australasia for its best practice systems and operations. John is a proud and active member of the Real Estate Institute of New South Wales, serving on the board of directors for 12 years, and in November 2015 was elected as president for a two-year term. In 2018, John was recognized for his contribution to the real estate industry and was awarded the prestigious Woodrow Waite Award for REI New South Wales. And then in 2019, he was awarded the highest honor in Australia, the REIA President's Award for services to the industry in Australia. John's dream of transforming the industry into profession has been a passion project for the past 10 years, and John continues to forge positive change for agents and consumers alike. In another major project, John is joining forces with other industry leaders to build the RISE initiative, which aims to create a new sustainable work environment for the industry through wellness, inspiration, and mastery, with a focus on mental health for everyone in the real estate industry. Oh my goodness. How exciting is that? John, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks, James. Very much appreciate that. Thank you. Got to so cut that bio down. It's a bit long, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. You know what? It is all needed. And that's the thing that I love about, you know, following your journey and watching you in your journey is it all needs to be mentioned. And I want to take you back to those early days of your career. What was the initiative of getting into the real estate industry?
It's an interesting one. I had a passion for real estate, just property buildings from a young age. I was a frustrated architect at 8 years old, wandering around building sites and looking at floor plans and designing my own houses when I was sort of 8, 9, 10. But I wasn't very good at school. I was actually blind and I had astigmatism and I just didn't learn at school. So I did dismally at school. And so the next best thing to architecture was real estate. That's where I am.
Love it. Love it.
I had a good mouth on me, so it was
good talk.
Yeah.
So fast forward now, like it's you're at a different part of your career. Obviously, you know, you've got some beautiful grandkids and so forth, and the business is operating pretty much self-sustainably. What was that transition for you over these last couple of years of making the decision of, you know, maybe I don't need to be as hands-on?
Yeah, look, I was a very conscious decision. I had a lot of friends across the industry who had taken certain paths that I thought were the right path. I was taking the wrong path. One thing I learned very early on was those that hold on to their precious or what they think is their gold often lose it by either greed or lack of generosity and without seeing what a succession plan looks like. So I realized that I had to do something at a certain time. So I'd been selling real estate for 30 years. And when I got to that phase, I'd already come to the realization that I had to put this plan in place. And I've been working on it for probably 5 years. I've been easing myself out of the coalface of sales. And, you know, with a couple of thousand sales under my belt and, you know, a very successful life in that sense, I then looked at the concept of success through others and letting go to grow. So empowering others to succeed was then my goal. It was like, you know, I knew that I had a lot to pass on. I couldn't do it all myself. I've been years of being what I'd call captain coach and leading try scorer. And that's not a sustainable model, quite frankly. So I then started to put in place, I put a prospectus together and brought my key people in with an understanding of this is the future. And so here we are, you know, 13 years later, and we've got 12 partners. You know, I have I don't like to call it an exit strategy. It's just a do less things, but of higher value in the business. So growing the people around me to go to the next level with whatever they want to do is the key ingredient now. So I've got other, you know, I do a lot of pro bono work and charity work and things like that that I have a great passion for, not only within the industry but outside in local community stuff. So that it all takes time. So
yeah, it does.
That's how it
does.
Is. It's a different focus. Yeah.
And that's, I just want to grab something on there, is it that time factor, because I think so many people within the industry, it's that now that knee-jerk response component. And what I'm hearing from you is that you had that realization and it's been a journey. It's not that's it, I'm done, but it's like, what's that next transition within?
I say to my partners, you know, I'm here for as long as you see value in me. As soon as there's no value, put me in the wheelchair and push me out. But also, you know, it's that realization along your career of knowing why you're doing what you're doing, understanding how you can do it the best you can do it, you know, understanding, you know, what it is that you do and what you're best at, and then moving through to the, you know, the who's actually going to support you in that, and when it's going to happen. So understanding all those components early on is critical. Some people just keep going and rolling with the punches and rolling on with it, and it's the next deal, the next deal, the next deal. I realized a long, long time ago that I had to really put a good structure in my life to have the life, work, family congruence that I wanted. Because quite frankly, I'd much prefer not to work. I'd much prefer going surfing. I'd much prefer going on holidays. I'd much prefer spending time with my family. But work enables me to do that really well. And I love my work, but I love the other stuff better. So it was finding that thing where they didn't conflict with each other. One wasn't fighting the other. You know, even little things like, you know, getting home, and I used to come home and I'd park in the driveway in the carport and finish off phone calls. And my kids be inside going, "Where's Dad? Where's Dad? Where's Dad?" My wife said, "Can you just park up the road and finish your phone calls? And when you get here," because they hear the car, they know you're here, "you're present and you turn that phone off." And that was these learnings that you have. That's just a little one, but that's just learnings constantly going, okay, yeah, I get it. This is how it's going to work. And so I was a great one for learning. Make a mistake, what I learn. And you never, and I'm always learning. I just go to conferences. I'm learning, absorbing and passing on. So the getting of wisdom and passing it on is the key now. And there's just as much going on now as there ever was.
That's that is incredible, because what I'm hearing is that it's also taking a helicopter view of where you see yourself and then where you see yourself over the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, and actually start to work on that. I guess taking yourself out of the trenches and the putting deals together, selling and listing and all that kind of stuff, where it's like, hang on, what else is important to me? What else would I, you know, like to work on? And you can't do that when you're constantly in the trenches.
I really conflicted that because it was one of those things, I just can't do all those things. And then I came to the realization that I can help other people on their journey have a great life. I can help them not make the same mistakes I made. I can help them, you know, have this better environment that they conflict, because we're in a conflicting business. It's constant contradictions going left, right, and center. But I learned I'm constantly learning, but I learned this thing, and it came to me in like an epiphany that, you know, every day I just have to decide what my intent is for the day every day. And that's asking myself three questions. First one is, who am I being today? Because, you know, you can be a dickhead. You can be a really energetic person. You can be, ask yourself the question, who are you going to be today? Because what are you looking at the mirror looking at? You're going, I'm not going to be good today. And then you ask the second question, which is, how am I going to be seen? Because how you've been seen by others is your persona. It's who people are going to judge you from that. In other words, if you're lacking energy, you're lacking confidence, you're lacking belief, that's transferable. That's going to come across to others. So have a good look in the mirror. These are three questions I look in the mirror and ask myself. And the third one is, what am I doing today? What am I going to do? And so once you come out with that intent on those three things each day, the day is so much better because you're actually starting with a really good place of understanding why you're going into the day. But just look in the mirror and ask those three questions.
Goal, absolute goal. Some huge nuggets right there. So with that, and obviously with your thirst to learn and seeing, you know, attending multiple conferences and seeing what's out there, what are you noticing within the industry? Is the industry adapting to this way of thinking, asking these three questions? Is it shifting? What are you noticing in the industry now, and where do you see it going over the next 6-12 months?
Yeah, look, I've definitely seen that. I mean, being involved with the RISE initiative is obviously a part of that, is actually changing the dynamic, changing the view that people have on what they do and how they do it and why they do it. And I'm seeing that change. Language is changing. Now, it's interesting. We created a theme for our business for 2023, which was Thrive, and I've transferred that over to RISE for the theme for 2023. I'm seeing Thrive talked about so much more. I'm seeing wellness and well-being and the industry. Once we started the RISE initiative 4 years ago, Chris Hanley started the whole thing. That changed the dial, because you started to give people another view. There is another way. It's not this smash out GCI nonsense. I had Andrew Liddell from Bresit Whitney talk at the last RISE conference, and he said it was a 5-minute talk, and these 5-minute talks are amazing. He said, you have to come to a realization when, you know, what's enough? You know, what's enough in my life? You know, I he's got 4 kids. He tries to keep the congruence really working well, but he has to ask himself, and he said, Ivan Bresic taught him that, you know, you have to ask yourself, how much is enough? Because some people just keep going and going, and they forget life. They think work is life. And man, if that's the case, what a hollow life. It seriously is a chance. You can actually have it all as long as you think about it. It starts with thinking, and God, my God, we've got so much stinking thinking still in ego-driven entitlement. But man, stop and smell the roses and just think about what life is. I figure I've only got one of them. No one's been able to convince me yet that there's anything out there other than the universe. So I'll just leave it at that. But the reality is, I'm getting older, but I'm living every day as if it's my last. I'm living every day as the best I can possibly do, because it's all I've got. I don't have tomorrow. Don't have yesterday. All I've got's now. And I look at now as being the day. But my hope for the industry is that this is starts to get permeated through. And I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it in coaches like Tom Panos, who was just all go, go, go. But Tom's going, hey. Tom stopped and smelled the roses.
Yes, definitely.
And it's like, you know what? There's a lot to learn, and it's not all about money. It's seriously out of control, in my view, and it needs to be recalibrated. And some people will never change, but as a concept, we are in a consumer-driven industry. We are influencing people to make good decisions in what we do. But we have to have their interests first and foremost. And I think that, to me, still hasn't shifted sufficiently to where it is for us to be classed as professionals. I think we're still transactional driven. What's in it for me, humans, who don't see the big picture. They don't connect the dots between themselves, the culture they're in, the leadership attributes they've got. They don't connect the dots with that and their clients. They don't connect the dots to consumers or the community they're in. All those dots are actually connected and interwoven and dependent on each other. Once you realize that, you have a sustainable career and an enjoyable life. God, the divorce rate in our industry is so insane. And again, we just need to stop and think.
So true. And there's so many different avenues we could go down with that response. But there's a couple of things, and I see it with a lot of my clients of having different conversations now talking about emotional awareness, talking about, you know, courageous conversations, talking about things like language and connection and relationships. Mm. It's just, it's beautiful. It's phenomenal.
I agree. It's changing and it's good.
It is. Yeah. And it's like, hey, let's just talk about home for a minute. What's happening at home? And you see the shifts and the lights go on because they know that that stuff is holding them stuff back at work. And we release that. It's like, it all comes down to connection and relationships. We can have better connections within ourselves and with our loved ones and our families and friends and work colleagues. That rubs off to clients and so forth. So
that's what I call it. We're in the connection economy.
Yes. You know,
and that's what we do. We connect things and we influence things and take that seriously. But understand that, put all the pieces of your life together and understand them, how they work. And I love the concept of congruence because it means they're actually not conflicting with each other. They're actually working in harmony.
So true. I want to grab the words that you said, ego entitlement. Where do you think that, like from your viewpoint, where do you think that comes from within the industry? Where do you think that comes from?
It's the remuneration model, basically, because we see this concept of the commission or the fee and what's my portion of it and what am I due? What's it been up to? You know, it's like people who have great EAs or assistant agents working with them and they pay them pittance. And they think every single person they've met is their client. Single person they've appraised is their entitlement. And the people will deal with who they want to deal with. And there's no such thing as my client. There's no such thing as I sold them that house or I appraised that property. There's probably six agents that have done that. There's probably two that have properly kept in touch. There's probably one that's really stood out and helped them in other things and actually made a difference in their lives. And other people think it's theirs. But then the person in their office who's going for it, they think they're the enemy.
Yeah.
It's all that sort of craziness, and particularly I think around the contract model, which has made the silo, and I understand, why it exists, but there's a lot of misconceptions about it as well. People think they're actually earning more money, but money stays in the company. As soon as you draw it out, you're paying the tax. What the hell are they thinking? But anyway, that's just accountants, making money. But the reality is it creates silos, and it creates silos of entitlement and conflict. And the last thing a client wants in any organization they're dealing with is to have a conflicting environment. They want the whole team working for them. They don't want ABC proprietary limited fighting with BCD proprietary limited and blah, blah, blah. All that stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And that's what creates the entitlement. People are so caught up in this rock star, and I hate that expression, real estate agents. Crikey, you're bloody selling real estate. Get over it. It's a high value commodity. But guys in Macquarie Bank who do deals that are 100, 200,000 more value than what we do, they walk around like rock stars, get paid a lot of money, but some of them are so far under the radar, you wouldn't know. I know one of them. You wouldn't know what he earned, but I guarantee you, he earns 10 times what I earn. It blows my mind. But the most unassuming guy. But I think, it's a strange model. And
it's
interesting,
isn't it?
The stakes are so high when we win something, and when we lose something, the stakes are even higher. And I think it just has created that rather than what goes around comes around and the more, that's my kind of thinking. If you look after each other, we look after each other.
Yeah, so true. Now, I'm interested to find out a little bit more around what's goes between your ears. And you mentioned your thirst for learning. Now, I want to find out, how do you continually work on your mindset? What are some of the things or principles? You mentioned your questions that you ask yourself every day. You're always attending conferences. You're always learning. What else do you do to sharpen your mindset, to continually work on yourself around that?
Well, the first thing I do always is just ask myself, how would I like to be treated in any situation, because it enables me then to take a perspective, because I love that concept of perspective. What's my perspective on this? Where am I coming from in how I'm seeing things? And I really have a very thick skin until it's broken, and then I'm
I get it.
It's like it takes a lot to rattle me. So don't rattle me.
Don't rattle you.
don't go too far. But I'm very conscious of the fact that everyone has different perspectives. Everyone's in a different space, and have to respect that. And you want to find out, you know, what's driving people's motivations and thoughts and behaviors. I don't want to get caught up in that. And so I'm very thoughtful. I learned a thing at a Quest for Life, I think, course I did years ago when I had a cancer. It was like, hey, you don't know what's going on in people's lives around you. You know, Tom talks about this a lot, and what's happening. So they're going through a bad thing. Well, that's James being James at the moment. You know, just accept James as being James. Understand the difference between reacting and responding. Stop, breathe, think, respond. But also just factor in that you don't know their story. You don't know what's going on. And I am a huge person who gives people a benefit of the doubt. And people do stupid things, right? And it's always going to do stupid things. I just want to find out what they're going to learn from a stupid thing and help them come out the other side. So my philosophies on my well-being is mostly driven by how I look after other people and how I treat other people. Because when I do that, you don't always get it back. But giving to me in any form, whether it's giving of knowledge or giving of support or giving of money or giving of time, is the greatest physical and mental benefit that you can have. It's three times greater than receiving. So that's why I do a lot of giving, a lot of volunteering and that sort of stuff, because you could say it's selfish because you get so much out of it. And if more people thought that way, wow, kindness.
How different would that be?
You know, it'd be just amazing. And I'm involved in a local charity that I've helped rebrand. It's called Community Northern Beaches. And you wouldn't know what Community Northern Beaches was. What does it actually do? Is it a library? Is it what? So I said, if you guys have an identity issue, I can help you change your identity. I bring in all the people, and I do a lot of that. I bring people I know into things to help things. And we had a brand identity specialist come in and came up with this amazing shift of identity to this charity, which looks after people on suicide watch, people on in refugee situations, people homeless, people in domestic violence, people in youth situations, all those services that a community looks after to the disadvantaged in society. We're rebranding it as local kind. And wow. As a concept, so insanely simple, but so much more relatable to people. So as a result of that, we're going out into our community and we're building ambassadors and supporters and that sort of stuff around the new concept. And the response has been incredible because of language. You mentioned language earlier. Yep. And the words we use and how we use them. So that type of thing, and I mean bringing people in who in the past may not have contributed, right? Because they go, oh, I can relate to that. And so it's a fascinating thing when you start to get into the psychology and how people work, and you go, well, what can I do? And a lot of agents think, oh, I'll just write a check out and do this thing. And we're big on participation. You know, that's the key to it, is being there, being seen. You know, as I said, who you've been, how you've been seen, what are you doing? So that combines the two. So I think I might have gone off track here a bit.
But no, that's perfect, because
it's about, you know, contributing to the world. Yep. You know, it's this, you know, you want to actually be able to be connected. You want to contribute. You want to actually add value. And as I say, you get so much out of it.
The returns are phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Now, you're a busy man. You've got so many things on the go, all these incredible projects that you're working on, family, you're still with the business. How do you manage your time? How do you fit it all in? What do you do in order to make it all happen?
Oh, that's the big challenge, because again, I much prefer to be with my grandkids than anything else, quite frankly. I love them to bits, and they're so much fun, and I just do stuff with them and help them and challenge them and grow. And they're only, you know, 4 months old through to 4 years old. So it's not like I can, you know, do a lot, but we do, we have a ball. So my time, a lot there, I work Tuesdays and Wednesdays at in the business. Tuesdays is mostly face-to-face meetings. Wednesdays is projects and things like that. And Fridays, I work bits and pieces, and I disappear up the coast every month and travel every year and do other bits. So this month I'm going to up to Smith Lake to our place, and I'm going up to Noosa the week later. So I've got a mixed life. And in between that, I slot in all the, I've got to go to Melbourne next Tuesday for Rise Strategy. You fit things, and you fit things in advance, and you make sure that you know what's coming up. We have a holiday calendar across our whole family to make sure that the holiday house is, you know, not double booked with the family and with the kids and that. And we have holidays together. We manage it well, and then we have beach time, downtime, walk time, dog time, and just make it happen. But I have to tell you, my surfing has suffered of late. Maybe because I've got a bit of a dodgy back, but I'm working on that. But that's my main, and yoga, surfing and yoga. They're my two releases, and walking the dog as many Ks as I can. So, it's a full life.
It is a full life.
I don't understand the concept of retiring, because what am I retiring from?
No.
There's a lot of stuff going on. So I'm just transitioning.
There's always
something less, but of higher value.
Totally, yeah. Totally. Now, we've got a 60-second quick quiz that we'd love to take our guests through. A bunch of questions, just whatever comes up as an answer. You ready for it?
Ready, go.
All right, let's go. Favorite movie?
It's Moulin Rouge. It's got everything.
Love it. Favorite food?
Oh, God, I love Vietnamese. My God, a trip to Vietnam a few years ago. Oh, best food, Hoi An. Unbelievable.
So good.
And Spanish.
And Spanish? Okay, cool. I'll give you two. Favorite holiday destination?
Well, that's two as well, I'm afraid. Corcular Island in Croatia and Andalusian region in Spain.
Oh, beautiful. Morning routine. What's your morning routine?
Well, dog walk or surf. One or the other, I've got to get active. And that affirmation intent. Sometimes we do a morning meditation before we get up, if we're sort of attuned, Anne and I, to the same time. It's a morning intent meditation or a get you going meditation, but 10-minute, 15-minute meditations are fantastic to get you into that zone.
Beautiful. And do you have an evening routine?
Reading. Try and shut everything down by 9:30, and then I like to read for probably minimum half an hour. And I have a thing for historical fiction. Definitely don't read motivational real estate books before going to sleep. No.
Good call. Do you have a most embarrassing moment?
Oh, look, that was a wetsuit moment, where I thought no one was looking, and I'm butt naked, and a little kid I heard behind me say, "Mom, look at that man's bum." And I turned around, and it was a client.
Oh, even better.
Well, at least it was just the bum.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. They weren't there when I started. And, you know, that's just that moment, go, no one's around. Don't worry about the tail. And yeah, such is life.
Love it. Yeah. If you could choose five inspirational people to have dinner with, who would they be? They could be dead or alive.
Okay, so I did give this one some thought, and they're quite interesting. Someone living, and they're all dead otherwise. Actually, no, two are living. Nazir Sabani. Now, Nazir Sabani is the guy that does haircuts for homeless people in Melbourne. He spoke at Rise a couple of months ago, and I had a chat to him afterwards, and I said to myself, my God, I would love to sit on a plane for 8 hours and talk to this guy. He was, and one of the best presentations I've ever seen. Amazing. I would have loved to have sat next to Franklin D. Roosevelt and talked to him about what he achieved through the New Deal in America coming out of the Depression, because it was a capitalist country and he put socialist ideas into play to change the dynamics. Fascinating to actually understand that. Other one is Sophia Loren, because I just want to sit next to Sophia for 8 hours and listen to her talk. That would be amazing. And her life and history would be fascinating anyway, but just a voice, just it's lyrical and beautiful, and I could listen to it all the time. David Attenborough, my God, can you imagine a person who the stories he could tell would be insane? And the last one's Peggy Guggenheim. Now, Peggy Guggenheim was the daughter of the Guggenheim dynasty, and she lived in Venice for like 20, 30 years, and after the First World War. And built a beautiful house on the Grand Canal and filled it full of amazing modern art. And I've been to Venice 3 times, and I've gone there each time because it's a small gallery, but the artwork is insane. And so and the people that she was, F. Scott Fitzgerald and all those people through Hemingway, and the life that she led through the Roaring Twenties would have been just fascinating to learn, and just to talk about modern art with her.
Incredible, incredible. Now, if you were Prime Minister for the day, what's one thing that you would change?
I'm going to become a socialist here. I would increase wages for teachers and nurses and police by 30%. And I would make their jobs a job that people would really aspire to do, so we would get the best people to do those jobs, and pay them accordingly, because I think they're the three professions in our world that mean the most to us when we need them the most, and they're not appreciated.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And best piece of advice?
My father gave me this, gave it to me in bits and pieces through my life. But then when I turned 18, he said, okay, let's now encapsulate it all in these 4 bits of advice. And then he reminded me of those when I started the business. One is just tell the truth. The truth will set you free. The truth is easy to remember because it's the truth. People do not remember lies, so they get caught out in life. Just tell the truth. It's the best, right thing to do, and it's the best thing to do. So one was, always apply common sense. Most people don't. They overthink things. They go from incarnation to incarnation. If it makes sense early, it's probably going to keep making sense. The third one was just be nice to everyone. You know, it doesn't actually cost you anything to be nice. And that's why, you know, I give people a bit of the doubt and I think and respond. But it pays the greatest dividend. Costs nothing but pays the greatest dividend. And I remember, you know, one of the first listings I ever got, I asked the people, oh, you know, can you just tell me why you gave me the business? And, oh, you're just such a nice, young, genuine man. But also, you actually know more than all those other agents. And you actually help people more than all those other agents. I went, well, there's a strategy. I'll follow.
There you go. Funny that.
I had qualifications and I was a valuer. And so I actually leveraged these to beat all these useless other characters. And the fourth bit of advice was, if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing well, which is the classic, you know, measure twice, cut once. So, and that was emblazoned on our shed in the back of our backyard, that, you know, if you're going to do it well. Don't cut corners. Don't do a half measure. Just make sure that you do a good job for everyone that is entrusting you to do something. So there's
my advice. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Now, what's coming up? What's over the next 6 to 12 months for yourself? And where's your focus at the moment over these?
It's been an interesting couple of years post COVID, where, you know, we've had a decline significantly on Northern Beaches in terms of stock. You know, sales volumes in 2022 were down something like 35%. They've increased probably 10%. So, you know, when we look at the norms, we're still, you know, volume-wise 20% down. We're a bit higher, which is great, a bit less, I should say, in terms of down. But it's also challenging in terms of your team and how things are structured and what people are used to. So we're going through a reassessment, I suppose, of roles, responsibilities, all that sort of stuff to become, I won't say leaner and meaner, but I'll just say actually more efficient with what we do. And we don't want to put people off and do that sort of thing. We actually want to get the best out of what we've got and grow. So we've created a growth hub of young agents entering our business. We've got 5 of those guys coming through to create our future. It's a big investment, quite frankly, but we are seeing a return on that investment already. We're doing the same with property management in the new business space, investing in that. Because again, we're seeing so many landlords selling, and we're going, and there's not a lot of new, not investors buying, and there's not a lot of new stock being built on the beaches to meet the demand. So we have to get a bigger slice of the pie. And the way that you do that is you create more opportunities, or you get more opportunities, and you win more opportunities. So that's what it is. You either find them and win them, and then lease and sell them. So it's both in sales and PM. They're the two focuses that we're going on. And a lot of training in that space, constantly training on the fundamentals, and constantly training on better. What's better look like all the time? What's better look like?